Next, welcome everyone to the Complete Unnecessary Podcast for Tuesday, October 13th, 2020. That's Derude shirted. Ian Ferguson.
That's me. Hello.
And I'm Pat Contry. Today on the show, we'll be talking about maybe a Spider-Verse MCU movie, maybe. We'll be doing an update on the Intellivision Amico. GameStop partnering with Microsoft, Dreamcast Mini might be on the way, and a couple other things going on, and an interesting book that might harken to our past in the podcast. First, we got wares at ultimatenintendo.com. We got enamel pins. We got certain guidebooks. We got a not for resale Blu-ray and other things, you know, and other things there as well. And we're also now on Anchor. If you're on Podbean, if you're listening to us on Podbean before, last week's episode would not be on there because now it's on Anchor. So go to anchor.fm/thecupodcast. Of course, if you're on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, wherever else you listen to your podcasts, Pocket Cast, whatever, it'll be exactly the same. It'll be flawless. You know why? Because I didn't hear any complaints about that. So I'm like, yes.
That's good.
No complaints is a good thing. But here's the best part about the anchor.fm/thecupodcast. You can leave us an audio message there. So I haven't checked them yet. So for maybe next week, Ian and I will play them. And it could be horrific. They could be funny. But either way, it'll be entertaining.
We'll find out, won't we?
But no, nothing too dastardly because they might mark your IP address. So anyway. And our pal Dexter Morrill has his Kickstarter. Mr. Miyamoto Makes Video Game History. Check it out there if you can. There's 2.5 weeks to go on that if you want to do that. So, Ian, GameSpot had some layoffs. Oh, first of all, how was your weekend, buddy? How was it? You made some food? You made some HelloFresh?
It was good. Mine and Vonnie's anniversary was on Saturday, or Sunday. Or was it? It was. It was Sunday, yes. So we hung out. We went to Fish Pit for early dinner. Great thing about Fish Pit is it's a small place. I think I've said this before. So if you reserve, you basically have the one seat that's there. So it's like one of the only restaurants you can go to now because it's mostly like takeout and whatnot. Or you can have
one
like,
seat.
You can have like the one seat. It can do like two smaller groups. But yeah, it's nice. So we can. It was nice to be able to go out and get a meal. Got her the Friday the 13th Blu-ray set for our anniversary. That's what she wanted.
So. I didn't know she was a Friday the 13th fan.
Yep,
that's the only slasher film series that I enjoy even a little bit. A little bit Freddy Krueger. I just like the mythology of how thin it is of Friday the 13th.
Yeah, I mean, Friday the 13th is fun. I think even the bad ones are, for the most part, pretty fun to watch, except for Jason Goes to Hell is, like, my least favorite movie of all time.
I never saw that one.
I hate that movie.
I own the final chapter on DVD, because that's actually, a good movie. It's actually, like, a good movie, regardless of whether or not you like Friday the 13th.
The first four movies are good. I feel like, you know, when we were growing up, that was around, that was when like Manhattan and like Part Six, like that was like
late
six,
80s.
Seven, and eight was yep. when we were growing up, and the movies had taken kind of like a jokier turn. Like they were still horror movies, they were still slasher movies, but they infused a bit more humor in them, and the deaths weren't as bloody or as gory as the original ones. But the first four movies in the series do actually tell
a story.
A pretty yeah. decent beginning to end story.
It was supposed to be the last one, the final chapter. Yeah. Like it was. And then realized, you know what, we can make one of these basically a year and make a lot of money because they're not expensive to make horror movies
right.
like that.
So, yeah, no, I enjoy them. I think the last time we did a rewatch of the series was like 2-3 years ago, so we're due for another.
Plus, Friday the 13th, they had the little Tommy Jarvis trilogy, 4, 5, and 6. It's like, how many horror franchises did that with sequels, like actually kept the same character and actually had like some sort of like arc to the character. You know, they changed the actor all three times. Well, Corey Feldman was the young kid in the flash forward, but six is when he becomes basically a supernatural being.
Yes,
because he's not in five. Spoilers. He's kind of in one, but not really. But so he's a real person up to four. He's a real person.
Yes.
Jason. That's what people don't realize. He wasn't like this like undead creature until six. Then at that point, they didn't fucking care anymore and went off the rails for six, seven,
and eight. They brought him back to life with a lightning bolt. And
Tommy, you couldn't leave well enough alone. You had to try to kill him again. And at that point, it was like cheese factor from six on out. It was just cheese there. But at that point, it was the cultural phenomenon. It was like no longer a cult thing. It was like, oh, every year there's going to be either a Jason movie or a Freddy movie. It was almost like every other year there's one, or about every year there's both. And that was a big deal back in grade school. People would talk about the new movies that were coming out, like sixth grade and fifth grade, seventh grade. And then they had Shocktober on WPIX in New Jersey, a New York station. So once you got to the late 80s, early 90s, you'd have Friday 13th and Freddy Krueger movies on every night during the week. They would do like, oh, this week will be five Friday 13th movies.
Right.
And they would edit out most of the violence, but they're still scary to watch that. So especially when you're like 8 years old, 9 years old.
So, yeah, that was my weekend. I also played a lot of Hades. That's the big game everyone's talking now.
God of War's cousin?
No. Supergiant Games made it. It's an indie game studio. They did Bastion, Transistor, and Pyre. Hades is a roguelike action RPG, but it's really cleverly done. The fact that you are an immortal being, the son of Hades, they play it right into the story. Like, everything makes sense. So it's the first time I've played a roguelike where it really makes sense that you're constantly repeating it. They use the ever-changing nature of Tartarus and, you know, the underworld from mythology. It plays right into the, you know, the changing layouts and the fact when you die, you come back to life. And every time you're resurrected in the Hall of Hades, the people who work there, like, the story progresses. So it's a really neat way of using that game mechanic to tell a story.
I like the art design. It looks like pencil sketched almost.
It's really, really nice art.
It almost looks like it's a comic book.
But yeah, it's fantastic. It's had me. Had me pretty wrapped up.
Hades you.
All right.
So this is bad news about, we predict this, obviously. We talked about GameSpot being acquired. Was it even 6 weeks ago?
I don't think so, no.
And they've already done an unknown number of layoffs. I've seen some people on, you know, Twitter basically say, all right, I don't have a job anymore. You know, it's always depressing to see that because people asking if there's any work available. So they got sold off here. It was Red Ventures. They bought the CNET Media Group, which was what it was a part of. It was along with Giant Bomb, CNET, GameSpot, $500 billion deal it was. They said the company would retain a vast majority of staff. But there's always layoffs with acquisitions. There always are layoffs. I've been a part of a couple of different acquisitions and market research, and it's always like, yeah, you know, we'll see. And then like 3 months later.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what they say. There's always going to be layoffs. There's always going to be, and I hate the term when it's used this way, but it's true. There's always going to be redundancies. There's always going to be positions that are filled multiple times over that you just don't need everyone for.
Oh, yeah.
And it sucks. And I hope those people land on their feet. But it was obvious it was coming.
I mean, how many more of these can you know, that you just sustain in the game journalism industry? It's like, seems like this happens every year. There's like some sort of big round of layoffs, and it's like there's not new companies popping up to sort of fill in the gaps.
Right.
It seems like at this point in time, what are you going to do? Well, some of these folks go off and do their own ventures, like the folks that used to, you know, the Kind of Funny folks used to be at IGN. And then you have like the folks that used to be on Game Trailers went off. Easy Allies did their thing. So some of these people splinter off before these layoffs happen. Now you see why. You see why they leave and do their own thing, because it doesn't last forever. Obviously, I saw something about Sackboy: A Big Adventure. I'm not sure if you have any comments on that. Are you excited about Sackboy?
I watched the trailer and I kind of am. I really liked the Little Big Planet games. and Media Molecule is doing those. And I don't think Media Molecule is doing Sackboy's Big Adventure. Media Molecule basically went on and started doing Dreams. Dreams is their new game that, you know, the big thing about Little Big Planet was you could create your own levels and you could do all this cool stuff in there. And Dreams is a bit more full-fledged. You can do more game types and stuff with Dreams. But they are still doing a... there is still going to be a Sackboy game, and it looks almost just like how the Little Big Planet games played out in story mode. And I had a lot of fun playing those with Vani. Yeah, I think I actually might be buying that. Maybe not the minute it comes out, but that's definitely something I'd pick up down the line to play with her. I'd probably just get the PS4 version. I don't think I'm going to need a PS5 for Sackboy's Big Adventure.
As I say, you're not going to need all the
all the ray tracing.
Ray tracing on Sackboy's face.
I'm sure it'll look nice. I mean, those games always do, especially like the how everything looks like it's made out of like craft parts and felt and stuff like that. I'm sure it'll look very nice on the PS5 if there's a graphical bump, but I don't know that that's going to be the game that makes me rush out and buy a PlayStation 5.
Did you see the new 2K graphics? Did you see the little trailer that showed the Warriors versus Dallas?
No.
It's almost lifelike. It's getting closer. Like, you see the sweat and the glistening on, like, it's funny how far it's come in, like, 10 years, these NBA games. But, you know, I'm sure the gameplay has evolved a little bit, but at this point, it's just, okay, how much sweat droplets can we put on your face?
How much money can we wring out of you, and how many droplets can we get on your face?
How many virtual card packs can you buy?
Yes.
You know? That's a new card. No one, you know, sports cards is basically, for the most part, dead versus what it used to be. But now it's all virtual stuff. Now it's all, you know, you don't feel a binder anymore. Now you just spend a dollar a spin or unwrap or whatever.
Yeah, cards have been popular again the past few years.
Sports cards?
Yeah. Past like 2-3 years, there's been
with kids?
There's been a no, it's all adults. It's all adults, but there's been a big bump in the market. And Vani had boxes and boxes of cards that she couldn't get rid of for like $10 a pop. For years, and they recently sold for like $40-$50 a box.
Or if people during COVID want to open up packs of cards?
Yes, that's exactly it.
The 49-year-olds that were collecting back in the late 80s.
Some of my friends were doing it. Friends like John and Lincoln, and my friend Joseph. They were buying like the cheap. They were buying like the cheap wax. You know, the
pro set hockey cards,
the cheap wax
pack,
like baseball cards.
Score.
They were doing those tops, and when they started doing it like a couple of years ago, it wasn't like a big deal. And then, like, all of a sudden, over the past couple of years, the prices on those boxes have gone up because more and more people have been interested in it.
That's insane to me because the number of boxes that are still out there, I mean, they made billions of the old.
The prices didn't really start to jump until COVID, and I think it's just because everything has gotten expensive during COVID.
I mean, God, almost to an 87 Topps baseball card.
I think that's one of the most common ones.
Yes.
So that's probably not.
Like, that was like the peak, like late 80s.
That's probably not going to be too crazy.
Yeah, I mean, the packs are worthless. Like $1 each for a pack. I mean, you won't even get that. A box unopened, $26, no bid. Yeah, I mean, I go to the swap meet and see boxes of this stuff, and no one wanted it. It's worthless, these cards. So someone graded a pack of 87 Topps. Why would you grade a pack of 87 Topps baseball cards? They'll never be, because they do that with the older ones, and people play the lottery, like, you know, like the 86, 87 Fleer set, which has all the rookie cards in it, like Jordan. So you'll see like them sell, because that's like your guarantee. I'll buy that, rip it open, and play the lottery to see if I get expensive rookie cards like the Jordan. That makes sense. Not a worthless card pack that costs you probably $30 to get graded. Like, that doesn't make any sense at all to do that. A million years from now, that will not be worth money. An 87 Topps baseball unopened wax pack. All right. Sorry. We went off the beaten track there. So there was a lot of interesting Spider-Man 3 movie news that's come out the past like 2 months. First, it was like, you know, at the end of you haven't seen Far From Home yet, right?
I haven't seen any of them.
I'm surprised. I enjoyed Far From Home a lot more than Homecoming. I thought it was very well done, even though I still have issues with the Tony Stark stuff. So now they announced Jamie Foxx was coming back as Electro.
Right.
And that was weird. Because, like, okay, that was in the second Andrew Garfield.
Because he's in between the two, universes. Yeah.
Well, yeah, that was not these movies. That was already, what, 8 years ago or so?
No, Jesus, really?
2014 it was, the second one. 2014.
Yeah.
Was The Amazing Spider-Man 2, which underperformed. It was the Batman and Robin of the Spider-Man movies. There was so much going on, so many villains crammed in, the Harry Osborn story crammed in. Harry Osborn wasn't in that first Amazing Spider-Man. All of a sudden, hey, you're back! It was like it was just off, the whole movie. Then they throw in the Rhino, Paul Giamatti as the Rhino. Then they throw in Electro, which it was a weird-ass Electro. It was weird. And some people liked it, but I think most people said it was a weird performance and a weird portrayal of Electro by Jamie Foxx. So they first announced he's coming back, and people were like, oh, well, they brought back J.K. Simmons as J. Jonah Jameson, so maybe it's the same sort of thing. But it's like, well, that was such an iconic role to begin with, how he portrayed it. It'd be weird to recast him. Electro isn't exactly the most famous Spider-Man villain to have, even though they kind of hinted that this could be a Sinister Six movie, this third Spider-Man movie, because his identity is revealed at the end of it, spoilers, of the second movie to the world. But it was still a weird choice. Why would you bring back Jamie Foxx as Electro? Are you going to play him the same way? Is it going to be a different Electro but the same actor? It just doesn't make any sense to do that. But then once they said, well, Doctor Strange is going to be in this movie, and it's like, well, right. The Doctor Strange next movie is going to be a multiverse sort of movie where he's trying to probably keep everything together from falling apart, the universe.
Whatever happened to that movie? Wasn't that supposed to be out like 2 years ago?
No, that was always like 2021. This is what I don't like about the MCU movies. The sequels are like 3 and 4 years apart. I like 2 years, three max between my sequels. Once you get to four, because like Thor...
They announced too much shit ahead of time, too.
Because like Thor 2 came out in like 2013, then Thor 3 came out in 2017. So now it's like for me 5 years between that. So these actors don't get any younger. So like you got to get your sequels in within like 2-3 years, not like 6 years, because it's going to be like almost 6 years between sequels for Doctor Strange. So there's also doing the WandaVision series though, which I think was all supposed to happen, where she went out of her mind because of the death of Vision, so she's now imagining a different reality, which is creating new realities. Like, so this is, I think, all going to work in. So what this is building towards is, how are we going to get the X-Men into our movies?
Right.
And probably Fantastic Four in a way. That'd be a simpler way to do that without reintroducing them in a movie. But now the fact they're going to do this, work this in with Spider-Man 3 is very interesting to do that. The news from the Hollywood Reporter is that he's going to serve as a mentor to Peter Parker, which makes me sick, because Spider-Man does not need another fucking mentor figure at all. Let him grow up and be a man. But that's what's going to happen with these movies. So what's interesting, people now are theorizing, well, if you're bringing in Electro, maybe you're going to bring back the Sam Raimi movies as well. Maybe you'll have these three different Spider-Man live-action stuff sort of interact in a way. Maybe you'll get a cameo from Tobey Maguire or Andrew Garfield. I'm like, that could be cool. They're basically doing that with the Flashpoint movie with the DC, but they got to reboot their universe. That's why they're doing that.
Right.
Because it's a fucking mess. You don't have to do that here, but it would be interesting just to see it. Because you didn't get an ending to the Andrew Garfield movies. You didn't get a good ending to the Tobey Maguire movies. There was supposed to be a fourth movie that they were supposed to do. Then they said, no, we're not doing this. We're going to just reboot it with Andrew Garfield. So I'm interested. I'm interested to see if they do that. That would be, even just for 20 seconds to see Tobey Maguire, I think people would go nuts.
This is something that it's driving me nuts with media. It's happening with movies, but also happens a lot with Netflix these days. Stories never fucking finish.
Sure.
Shit gets canceled or switched around or bought out by someone else, and it's just, well, fucking reboot it, just restart it, or we're done. And it's, I don't know, it sucks. There's no commitment to a fucking beginning, middle, and end anymore.
Well, Spider-Man 3 had an ending, but it sucked a lot. Like, so the fourth movie, they even realized the fourth movie is going to fix this. We're going to clean up, have a really good go out with a bang fourth movie, which I was on board for. But then when they canceled it, it was like, fuck. what are you going to do? Because Spider-Man 3 is a mess. And any revisionist history to say otherwise is...
I've never seen it, and I won't.
I walked out numb. I wasn't even pissed. I was numb when I walked out. Because you don't understand the build-up, how Spider-Man 2 was so excellent, and then 3 was like, holy shit, we're going to get Venom.
I mean, I do understand. I was there. I saw the movies.
Well, you didn't see that one.
Because I heard it was fucking awful, so I said, all right, I'm not going to spend my money on it.
It wasn't that it was awful. It was just so underachieving that you wanted to, like... After how excellent 2 was, you couldn't believe it was the same series at that point.
2 was very good. I liked the first two Raimi Spider-Man movies. Yes. I thought they were good movies.
And then 3 had meddling because Raimi famously did not want to put Venom in it. And thank you, Raimi. And too bad you couldn't stick to your guns, but the studio wanted you to do that. He wanted to have Sandman and Vulture as the villains. He wanted to have two classic Spider-Man villains. And then they said, no, well, we don't want to do Vulture because who cares? What we're going to do Venom instead and not have it make any sense at all, and then have Sandman be Uncle Ben's killer, spoilers, Ian, which spits in the face of every fucking Spider-Man fan. So the whole thing sucked. Like, it sucked. Because they set up Harry to be... Harry could have been a standalone villain as Second Green Goblin for Spider-Man 3. They set up brilliantly in the sequel. They set up brilliantly. And then they sort of just like said, well, we're just going to throw that away in the first 15 minutes. Like, that's done. Even though that was like what everyone was... like. So it really should have been like Sandman and just Green Goblin. Like, that would have been fine if you want to do Sandman. But anyway, sorry. And then Amazing Spider-Man 2 was a mess, underperformed, so they canned that. And then they did the deal with Marvel, which was a big deal. And then Disney/Marvel, so end of story there. But anyway, so I'm looking forward to this. I just don't want every Spider-Man movie to now lean on multiple Spider-Man, because that's I think the second anime movie is going to have multiple Spider-Man again. It's like I'd rather see a Miles Morales standalone movie. I don't need to see 7 different Spider-Men in each movie. Spider-Man is interesting enough as a character to have one guy in the movie, though. I just hope that's not going to be how they do it going forward. That's all. It's a gimmick. It's a fucking gimmick to me. And no more being, how many mentors does Spider-Man need? Jesus Christ. Anyway, sorry about that.
It's all right.
But I think Doctor Strange could be interesting in a Spider-Man movie. Because I do like Benedict Cumberbatch's portrayal.
Yeah, he does a good job.
Before I totally lose interest in this stuff, because it's interesting, because there hasn't been an MCU movie this year. And I guess Black Widow's still coming out in November. I don't even know. This whole year is a fucking wash. But it's like... everything got pushed back, so I'm like, my interest is fading so quickly.
We're at the point where we have to start thinking about Christmas shopping, Pat. So yeah, this year is done.
Is Christmas canceled? Because no trick or treating this year. You're not supposed to give out candy to kids. Which you don't understand how much I enjoy that each year. Really enjoyed doing that. I put up a little costume. I did a Frankenstein mask last year, and like
I would.
Fuck,
I would,
this year.
I would love trick-or-treaters. I've always...
You're not supposed to have them this year.
No. I don't get them anyway. I live in an apartment building. Oh. No one shows up. Vonnie and I, every year, we put out a basket. We put out our big black cat. The head is a bull.
Oh, that's adorable.
And we fill it with candy. And the comic book industry has started doing like comics for Halloween, like the free like the free comic book day stuff you can order for Halloween as well, and they do like little Halloween issues. Mm-hmm. And we would hand out like comics and candy, but no one would come to the door. That's a bummer.
Oh, I almost forgot,
we bought full-size bars too.
Wow,
full-size bars. The one year we were like, fuck it, we'll get full-size bars and comics, and nothing.
Big spenders there.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. The multiverse thing, this is how they're also going to bring the Venom character into this as well.
All right. Good for that.
Good for... yeah. Sorry. Okay. Nintendo went after an adult TikTok influencer, an OnlyFans person. People asked us to talk about this. So there was a person called Poke Prince CXSS. Was that Princess? TikTok user with 1.9 million followers, and she was forced to change her name and pay back some of her earnings after Nintendo issued a cease and desist here. Okay, so this was reported from GameRant. So this is what happened. So this influencer, God, I hate that. You know, you hate it. I hate it more and more. So she had...
can't stand that term.
So she had Pokemon-branded merchandise, and that rubbed Nintendo the wrong way. She sold shirts and T-shirts with Pokemon characters and Pokeballs. And Nintendo cease and desisted her, was what I saw. And so some people, I guess, to me, it's like common sense. Don't sell Nintendo merchandise, but on top of that, she's in the adult realm, so Nintendo would definitely go after you at that point.
Yeah, the Kotaku article points out there are countless other people selling shirts, mugs, and prints featuring Nintendo characters. I think it's the fact that this person is known. Yes, there are lots of websites that have bootleg Pokemon stuff on it, but if you're if you're a person who's doing Twitch, YouTube, OnlyFans, stuff like that, and you're selling merchandise, your merchandise with that stuff on it, it's just going to get to Nintendo quicker, and they're going to shut it down quicker.
Yeah, this isn't a person with like 100 followers. This is a person with tons of followers. So like it's gonna get out there, and I think again the adult angle, Nintendo was definitely like, okay, we have to stamp this out. She put out a video, said, "I got sued by a giant company." She didn't get sued. That just annoys me because it makes Nintendo out to be the super, super, super bad guy. A cease and desist is basically just saying, hey, knock it off. That's illegal. Knock it off. If you knock it off, they don't go after you. Not holding Nintendo's water here, but it's like, I don't know what else Nintendo would expect them to do in this situation.
Well, so. She says, obviously that really sucks, but from a business standpoint, I have to understand and accept it because I fucked up. Pointing out that she's been using the name for 8 years now, and... she didn't understand the law. Okay. She adds, "I want to make it clear that I'm not trying to play the victim and only hope to somebody people can learn from." Go away, ads. I'm reading. "I only hope to be someone people can learn from and not to make the same mistakes. I still love Nintendo and will forever support them."
There you go. I mean, it's not...
I mean, yeah. I mean, you can't...
She's already got more attention. She got more attention than this. I would have never heard of her probably from this. And now she's going to probably get more followers and make more money. And she's already made a lot of money from the past merchandise. I don't think Nintendo's getting all that back.
The end of the day, it doesn't seem like it's really all that bad of a situation.
Yeah. Sure. So you excited for Animaniacs coming back?
To a degree.
They're zany to the max, Ian.
It was just,
I don't
know. You
sit back and relax. Collapse. They're Animaniacs.
Yeah, they are. I mean, seeing that pop up on my feed the other day was pretty exciting.
So it was a teaser trailer in the realm of Jurassic Park. The scene when they finally see the fucking all the dinosaurs in the distance and like lose their mind.
Yeah, but they see Yakko, Wakko, and Dot instead, and I thought it was cute. They announced that they were also bringing back Pinky and the Brain. Hopefully we'll see some of those other shorts come back too.
The Goodfellas was always funny to me. To do a Goodfellas.
Yeah, there was the Goodfellas. Yeah. Slappy Squirrel.
Slappy. I enjoy Slappy Squirrel. I really liked, for some reason, I liked the... God, it was the big dog trying to save the baby.
Oh, yeah.
That was just adorable. They always did like a medley. There's always like three or four different segments.
The humor seemed to be the same type of humor. The art looked, obviously, it's not like hand-drawn, but it looked very, very similar.
It's in the realm.
It didn't look like cheap, slapped together like Flash animation we're doing this for a profit. It looked like there was some, thought into it.
Adult humor, obviously, because that was big with all the Warner Brothers cartoons.
Yeah. Surprised that they jumped right to Animaniacs and didn't reboot Tiny Toons, but I don't really care. I just thought that was kind of surprising that they didn't.
Really?
Yeah. I figure Tiny Toons would have been ripe for a reboot at some point.
I think Animaniacs is more relevant, being that it always leaned more social commentary and political. And so I think that's going to be some of that. I can't wait for this is too political. It was always political and social satire, Animaniacs. Always.
Everything's political. You just don't remember it when it's politics that you agree with, or you're not, or you're just too young to get it. Like,
and honestly, like... I never was drawn to Tiny Toons. I wanted to watch Animaniacs. I thought Pinky and the Brain was absolutely brilliant whenever they had those. And then, like, the Christmas special actually brought a tear to my eye.
Oh, like I said, I enjoyed Animaniacs.
It's a fucking Orson Welles basically parody for children who don't know who Orson Welles... Like, it's insane.
Who did the voice? Was it Maurice LaMarche, I think, does the voice?
Is he still alive? It'd be a shame if he's not around anymore.
No, I'm pretty sure he's still alive.
Pinky and the Brain voice.
Maurice LaMarche. LeBlanc.
Maurice LaMarche. Let's see. You can't do it without the same voices. It's tough. It's never exactly the same, even when you get someone.
Yeah, he's still around. He's 62 years old.
Wow, I didn't realize they had that many standalone episodes. 90. They had. See, they had 97 segments overall. I guess between Animaniacs, and I guess they had their own show as well for a little bit.
Pinky and the Brain.
Yeah,
yeah, they did. They had their own show.
Sure. So that was obviously the big spinoff from Animaniacs, but there was like five or six individual segments on Animaniacs. So, all right, it's going to come to Hulu. All the episodes are coming November 20th. So I will definitely check that out. Do I have Hulu anymore? I used to use my ex's password. I might have to gently ask her to get her password again.
I will definitely give it a shot. Cartoons are all that I can be bothered to watch these days.
But I think this is gonna be interesting. They can probably do parodies of like superhero movies in there, and like this year is so fucking nuts that I think they're going to be commenting on some of the stuff this year.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It'll be the gentler version of like how South Park, you know, comments on stuff. Animaniacs, there. So which the pandemic special was great from a couple weeks ago. South Park. Anyway. All right, well, that's it for this intro. Is anything else is going on?
No.
Is anything else going on? Nothing?
No.
Nothing in our lives going on at all interesting?
Nope. I talked about what was interesting in my life.
I think you're interesting, Ian.
Thanks, Pat.
Oh, there's going to be... That was like a disdainful acceptance of a comment. Real quick. There's going to be a new Flavor of Madness in early November. I'm editing it right now, and I'm going to try to do an NES Punk this month. Try to edit the Flea Market Madness a little bit, but then go to do the NES Punk episode and hopefully do that while I still have the energy and will to do those. But then you'll have a new Flea Market Madness next month for sure. Because people like the madness, Ian, and they're from 5 years ago, from 2015, the ones I'm currently editing. Because I would shoot when I went every week. And for those that were saying, that is a couple people say, why are you putting this out from 2015? Would you rather me not put them out? Like, the reason I used to... they're easy to shoot. That's why I did them. Like, they're easy to shoot them. And then I was working on this really heavy and expensively long guidebook, so I couldn't edit anything in basically 2015 or 16. So that's why I'm editing them now, finally. I got my mojo back there.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
All right, Ian.
Yes.
So originally... The console called the Intellivision Amiga was supposed to come out October 10th, 2020. They took
and it was ready to ship.
It was ready to ship.
By gum.
Yeah. and they took pre-orders for it back in March and April. They still are taking pre-orders now. If you want the Galaxy Purple one on GameStop, it's a very inexpensive $300 for the Galaxy Purple edition. So I guess in lieu of the console actually coming out, they decided to put out a couple of update videos for the Amiga. They did a hardware video and a gameplay video, and I guess we'll go through the hardware video first. So it was Tommy Tallarico, the CEO, talking about the design of the console with a couple of folks, I guess, who were helping with the design. I think he went to a company to basically said, give me an idea. Like, I have an idea for a console. This is how I want it to look. Make it for me. He went to one of these companies that helps design products.
Sure.
So he talked about he wanted Ferrari and Lamborghini curvature on it. He has a car fetish. Okay. I don't know how that's relevant at all or why you'd want to tell people that. I just don't know. Like, why... you want that to be part of your hardware video, but okay. The one thing I'll say, though, this is another pitch for investors, this whole video. I don't see how any consumer or anyone interested in a video game console wants to know almost any of this information in this amount of detail. Like, this is more detailed than Nintendo would ever tell you about how they were thinking about the design of a console or the plastics or the finishing or things of that nature. It's a very strange video.
Yeah, it's definitely I think it's definitely, it was more towards investors. People do like teardown videos. But when you're dealing with a teardown video, most people want to see, like with the PlayStation 5 teardown video, you're dealing with some cutting edge tech there.
Learning about the chip technology.
Learning about what's in there, all this.
DDR.
What are we learning about with the Intellivision? Well, we're learning about what kinds of plastics and finishes are being used, and how thick the plastic is. We're learning about the cooling vents.
Yeah, that was weird. Just real quick on that. I'm not trying to slam the technology of cooling vents, but like almost all electronic devices have some sort of cooling that's involved, like hair dryers, or I don't understand like why that would be focused on like so much. Like that's common sense that you're going to have cooling for your game console.
Focusing on color choice, so it's the centerpiece of your living room. That was something that was brought up many times during that video that I thought was putting a laughable amount of undue importance on the Intellivision Amico in someone's day to day life.
Yes, and that's what the one thing you want to get on me and Ian for being unfair if you don't like us. We actually have not really knocked how this console physically looks. It looks cheap, like how it actually looks, the console.
Yes.
It looks cheap. People online are saying it looks like a foot bath. It does. We haven't said that because I don't like making fun of how consoles look. Because it's really what they offer, what software, and how it operates.
So I mean, the PlayStation 5 looks pretty fucking dumb.
But like that's the thing. The whole point is that like every console looks dumb. Like I'm sure people were making fun of the GameCube when it was announced because it's a fucking cube.
Actually, I always thought the GameCube and the Dreamcast were pretty sexy looking consoles.
Here's the point, though. I thought it's, even for this product, too low-hanging fruit to talk about how bad the console looks. To me, that's the last thing on the list. But to have the audacity to me to say it'll be the centerpiece of your living room? Come on. I mean, come on, man. So they talked about, they did a couple minutes on the LED lights almost. So we already established that the controller is going to have LED lights, and they claim that some games are going to use the lights. You're going to look at the controller in order to figure things out, like I guess the yellow will point down, so you click that button down for yellow or in order to open a yellow.
It all sounds very, very exciting.
Yeah,
game breaking, game changing.
Yes,
maybe game breaking,
or like I guess in order to solve a puzzle, if you're trying to defuse a bomb, maybe the colors will go. First of all, if you're colorblind, you're kind of fucked. If you're Ian, you're screwed.
Yeah,
I would have come to that. But then the console is going to have, correct me if I'm wrong, 40 LEDs on the console itself.
Well, someone will correct us if we're wrong.
40 LEDs. So if you wanted to justify having gameplay elements on the controller itself, even though me and Ian always say it's really bad to have to look down at your controller to play things and look back up.
There's a reason why the Wii U did not do a lot of stuff between the gamepad and the TV. They realized pretty quickly in that it's uncomfortable to have to constantly...
It's unintuitive.
Right.
You don't have to constantly shift your focus and attention between two different objects.
The reason why the DS and the 3DS were able to do it was two screens, and it was... But you could... They were both in the same...
They're in your view.
They were in the same field of view, and it was rotating your eyes up or down. It's... Once you have to actually start moving your head, it becomes strange.
Yeah, so I don't understand the LEDs on the console. Because if you're definitely not going to look at your console 20 feet away, 50 feet away, to see what the hell is going on, if it has anything to do with what's on the TV, that's going to be insane.
Right.
To do that, to go back and forth between the TV, controller, console, like, that's nuts to do that.
I mean, certain games it'll work fine with. The stuff that they're doing that's going to be, like, the Jackbox games, which is not a new concept, like the Emoji Charades or whatever the hell they were showing. There are some game types where that will work, but it's not action games.
Emoji Charades, the pre-existing app game?
Yeah, the pre-existing app game.
Yes.
That's an exclusive. So, aren't all these games supposed to be exclusive?
Oh, yeah. Well, Ian, well now there's this exclusive feature, so maybe we'll add a level and call it exclusive. Okay, so here's the point, is that that's there's no reason to put LEDs on a console. You're jacking the price of the console, at least some dollars right there. And no one will want to use it as like a light show element. Like, no one's going to do that. The older crowd's not going to do that. The people that you're trying to get that played the Wii 15 years ago, 14 years ago, are not going to use that. Kids are not going to care about that. You can buy a little LED device that does that shit for under $20 if you want something like that.
The problem is this is all, even if it is something that people like,
it's just tacked on.
Surface deep novelty bullshit.
It's just tacked on. Can we do it? Yes. Tack it on. You know, it has nothing to do with running a game console.
You know, the weird thing is I don't feel like it's tacked on, because this has been something that they've been very proud of since the beginning.
When I say tacked on, I mean it's an element that you're throwing on a game console just because you can do it.
I felt that's what you meant, but I want to be clear here that these LEDs have been something that they have talked about since the beginning. They are not going to be game changing.
Like, I can put LEDs on a toaster if I'm making a toaster.
Sure.
Doesn't mean I should do it. I can have the toaster be the centerpiece of my kitchen and have a little laser LED light show while I'm frying eggs. Doesn't mean it's a good idea or consumer wants it. That's the point. That's what I'm trying to say here. So the big thing that I noticed on the hardware change on this, they showed the back of the console, and it had your standard SD card, your power function was on the back of there. It had your HDMI out. The big thing that was gone, though, is now the Ethernet jack is gone there. And I understand that could be a small cost-cutting measure. But the reason I think that's... I would love to have kept that if you're really targeting the older crowd is it's one less step.
It's simpler.
It's one less step not to set up your gateway and your Wi-Fi and dealing with that. If you're in your 70s, Frank still struggles with Wi-Fi stuff. Like, that's not something, even if you get used to it, you still have to wrap your head around it. Some people just don't get that stuff.
I'm not going to make a big deal out of it. It's a cost-cutting thing, and I think for 99.9% of people, it's not going to matter. But I do think it's funny, because that was the first thing I thought of. One of the things that's constantly harped on when it comes to selling this thing is that it's simple. Everything else is too complex. Well, you should have left the simple option on there then, because with that, all you do is plug it in and go. Yeah, you don't have to find anything. You don't have to put in any passwords. It's just plug and play.
This is not a plug and play system. You have to be on the internet. You have to have servers. You have to download games. So yeah, it's just one extra step.
You know. I hate to double back to the LEDs, but I just wanted to say real quick that the thing that I thought was funny in that video was Tommy saying that because of his experience in putting on live music events, he knows that lighting is important, so that's why there's going to be lights on a television.
You're looking for that correlation there?
I'm looking for the correlation. I'm not finding it. I'm not finding why A leads to B. That's very, very strange to me.
Okay. They revealed the chip, kind of. Not exactly which one it is. There's wireless contact charging. You can get 4 hours of gameplay for 2 hour charge. Okay, I'm not sure if that's good or bad. It sounds a little bit low, but whatever. They're chonky controllers, so you know.
They're chonk boys.
So they revealed it's the Snapdragon. It's a Snapdragon chip.
That's all they've revealed. They didn't say which one.
They said they're partnering with Qualcomm, which means they're putting an order to buy Qualcomm Snapdragon chips. So, Ian, what is a Snapdragon chip?
Snapdragon is a mobile chipset. It's Qualcomm's mobile chipset. It's been around for a while. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's old or outdated, but it's not like a brand new thing. Snapdragon's been around. It's in your phones. It's in your phones, and it's in the Intellivision Amico, because the Intellivision Amico is just playing phone games that you have to pay $250 for to access for no fucking reason. No reason whatsoever. Sorry, starting to feel something.
Hit you again. Yeah. So interesting is that people postulated this was a banana pie board and chip in here. And from my hardware source, who knows a lot about this stuff, he postulated that they probably were developing this originally on a banana pie board, which is like, you know, a $20 off-the-shelf, you know, board and chipset combo, Android board. So what he said was that you can get a Snapdragon chip as long as the same processing specs with the Banana Pi. You can just slip that bad boy right into that board, and you can maybe you get small. You'll get an upgrade on your power, but you can basically do that. So that's probably what the realm of what they're doing here. Maybe they see a small advantage of using a slightly more powerful chip, and so that's why they're going for Snapdragon. But it's in the realm of that Banana Pi still, like whatever that's supposed to be, that 1.8, what is it, a quad core chip or whatever, something like that. I believe that's what it was. Gigahertz, 1.8. Yeah, color choice, so it's the centerpiece of your living room. We were not easy on the VCS, the Atari VCS. At least that looks like has a sleek design. It looks like something. The design of the
I famously said something about how it looked once.
You might have slapping some piece of body parts onto it because it looked sexy at the time. So okay, so they talk about taking design elements from the original television controller in this video. Which again, that was the first thing Meaning said when this was originally announced. Like, why would you go back to that well when no one ever went back to it and no one likes that controller? And again, it comes down to the vanity of wanting it to appear like the original television.
It's vanity. That's my favorite system, so it's going to be everyone else's favorite system, including this awful controller.
It was my favorite console when I was 10, so 10-year-olds 40 years later are going to enjoy it as well. Like, It's just arrogance. That's what it comes down to. It's arrogance with your product.
Yes.
That's what it is. Even though they're not banking on the Intellivision nostalgia at all, you know, that can we forget that was thrown at us? Like, you guys are saying that we're not banking on the Intellivision. Really?
Yeah, I mean, you are, because the only people who are interested in your product are 50-year-old white dudes that sit around and say, yes, Tommy, on a podcast.
A funny moment happened in this video at 8:55 in. It was a little, I guess, little promo video they shot. Pieces of this were in the August 5th, they delayed a day, a video. They show four people playing Intellivision skiing there. They're all playing on four of the controls. Oh, no, they're playing on their cell phones in the video.
Yeah.
In this promo video, they're literally all playing with the cell phone layout on their either Android phone, it looks like. So I don't understand why you would even show that in your video.
Especially when you have constantly said that these games can only be done with that Intellivision controller, and that's why you've just shown that they can be done with a cell phone.
Why are you showing that? Like, why? You couldn't get prototypes in their hands, they didn't pretend they
They put out another demo. They put out a demo for Breakout.
One of the games we actually looks good.
Sure, it does. But they put it on the PC.
Yeah, I played it. I played it with a mouse.
Yeah, well, what did you play? You played it on a computer with a mouse?
Yeah, no, I don't have a prototype of Mika laying around. I played it on my computer.
So
with
you
a
played
mouse.
It with a mouse on a computer?
Yes.
Okay, not on an Intellivision.
No, I don't think so.
That is necessary for these experiences.
Even though it's past 10:10, there's not one out yet, so I played it on a computer.
Okay, just making sure.
Oh, I see what you're saying. You don't need the Intellivision Amico to play some of these. Okay, that's what I see.
Yeah. Yet to see any game that requires an Intellivision Amico at this point.
Okay, so that was interesting there. And then they talked to the Arc Electronics, who are, I guess they're the people that are going to oversee the manufacturing in China. They're based out of California. You had two guys in the company saying, we were so excited about the idea of bringing the family back together. These are guys that, like, in their 60s or 70s. They're so excited at checks being cashed. That's what they're excited
about. Yes, exactly.
They will manufacture whatever you want. I want them to manufacture. If I want to do that toaster with the LEDs, I'm sure they'll be the guys I want to talk to get it done.
Yeah.
So again, this is for investors,
and they'll gladly, I'm sure, shoot
appear
you a video
in my video for
that says
minutes.
That you're bringing breakfast back to the family.
I'm bringing light shows back to breakfast.
Yeah,
basically. Okay, so that was the first video they put out. Then they put out a gameplay video. By the way, before all this, they had technical difficulties, I guess, streaming this live, and then afterwards they canceled Tommy doing a Q&A from his his attic apartment office. So they were having problems with that. So this is a gameplay video. I hear.
I'm going to jump right to the meat of this. What was one of the big selling points of the Amiga supposed to be?
Besides the LED light show?
Besides the light show.
These are games you can only play and access on the Intellivision.
And they are exclusive games.
They're
right?
They're all exclusive. Well, that's one of the things that was fired back from Atomic saying, well, you can't play these games on mobile because they're not available on the phones.
Well,
that was directly said.
That's bullshit. Because in that gameplay video towards the end, we're just going to get right to that. This is where the important stuff is. They breathlessly announced that they had gotten some branding partners back in August.
Back in August.
Sesame Street. They had nothing to show for it, but they just showed it. Care Bears. MLB. Well, they showed some stuff with those properties. They showed some Sesame Street games. That's nice. The Sesame Street games are all web games.
That are available free at sesamestreet.org.
Here's the big news. This isn't Intellivision news. They didn't drop these early so you could go play them. No, they're just out there. You can go play them for free right now.
They showed Count Me to Sheep, Big Bird's Basketball, Cooking with Cookie, and Cookies Cookies. They showed at least those four games. I identified immediately that, okay, and this is the problem with this at this point. Now, because of the dishonesty of the marketing campaign and the words of the CEO, now in my free time, I have to now try to go on the web or my phone and look up every goddamn game that is shown to see whether or not it pre-exists. And now it's a coin flip. Now it's like 50-50. Does this pre-exist or not? Like Nitro Derby, that VR game that was shown, that pre-exists.
But you know, this is even crazier.
This is embarrassing. This is an embarrassment.
Free web games.
Free mobile games that have been available for years.
Is what you're advertising your system can do.
It's embarrassing.
Then, Care Bears Care Carts that they showed at the end is a mobile game. You can get that on your phone right now.
That's the first thing I did now. The first thing I did was Sesame Street. I said, you know what? I'm going to look. I didn't see it on my phone. I went to the website. I looked up. I Googled Sesame Street web games. And access it from there. And I was like, well, this is where it came from. Right there. There's the guy. There's the little, what was it? It's sleeping in the bed. There was that. Which one was that? Was that Grover? I don't know. But then I looked up Care Bears and I found it. Like, this is what we have to do now every time, unfortunately, is figure out, is this bullshit or not? So if you pre-ordered this console, you shouldn't feel embarrassed about this necessarily. You should feel alarmed.
Yes.
That this is what's presented to you as, excuse me, these are supposed to be games in development. At the beginning it says, what does it say at the beginning?
Early development.
Work in progress, early gameplay demos. So this is what, if you're a YouTuber that's trying to make a some sort of name for yourself by doing these daily Intellivision Amico videos, or you talk to Tommy, I would ask him, how many of these games from this gameplay update video are actually playing on Amico hardware? How many of them actually are? And how many, like the Switch, what was that, let's see, what was that shooter that's on the Switch? Like, we knew that 2 months ago, they just took footage from a trailer showing the Nintendo Switch version of that shooter. So how many of these are actually running on the Amico? Because now we have to ask that every single time we look at this. We have to ask ourselves that.
Right.
We shouldn't have to do that. We shouldn't have to do research. In theory, you should be able to trust what the marketing department of a video game company is telling you and not having to search out, well, this game is here. Evel Knievel's on a mobile phone. This game, Finnegan Fox, oh, this was a pre-existing game. They're now pasting over that already existed as Fox and Force. This is where we're at now. And it's not a joke anymore. This is serious to me. This is beyond House of Cards to me now. This is damning stuff. Like, beyond damning to me to see this stuff. Is that how they're going to justify that it's exclusive? They're going to buy out old mobile games and put them on their console?
Possible.
Games that were free and get you to spend $250 to $300 and then buy it on top of that? It's an embarrassment to me to see that. They showed updated Cornhole. They showed Nitro Derby again, which is a pre-existing game. They showed the Pong game we love. They showed Snafu. Snafu looks cute.
I like Snafu.
It looks like that art design looks cute for that, to be honest. You like how Shark looks?
No. No, it looks like it was fucking kitbashed together from a bunch of different assets. It looks awful. And the shark looks like a ripoff right out of that Shark Tale movie.
Let's see, what else? Yeah, Evel Knievel. They showed I guess, the early prototype build. I mean, early. They showed a pre-alpha. It's a baseball game that looks like it was tossed together within a week. That I can't believe they showed this.
Wonder if I can get something more complete for $1.99 on my phone.
Here's the thing about this MLB baseball game, is that they're banking on the nostalgia of you played MLB baseball on the Intellivision, whatever that came out, 81 or so, 82. When that Intellivision baseball game came out, it was heralded and marketed as the most advanced baseball game at the time on a console.
Yeah.
It was advanced. Mr. Intellivision himself, Plimpton, said, look how shitty the Atari one looks. This is how the Intellivision one looks. We actually have 9 players on the field. Now, this is the worst possible looking baseball game that you can probably get in 2020 or 21.
Oh, yeah.
That's the difference. So now we've done a 180 on how the Intellivision baseball game was advanced, and now it looks like utter trash. Like, I mean, that's how they're marketing it, though, towards the nostalgia, you know. So yeah, it's nuts. Emoji Charades is a pre-existing game. Nitro Derby, Rigid Force Deluxe, like I said, that's the Switch game. So yeah, if they had said in the bottom of each of these games, this is footage from the mobile game, this is footage from the free web browser game, this is footage, that would have been better. It still would have been embarrassing, but it would have been better. So now so now when I see, like, oh, there's a blank slate on here, I don't know if that's a pre-existing game. I don't know if that's only on the Amico. I don't know if that's a game being developed for mobile apps that they're going to get a piece of. You know what I mean? I have no idea. I can't trust any of this anymore.
No.
We could barely trust it before, but now it's a toss-up on these games. It's a toss-up. Do you like the improved cornhole? It's no longer 20 frames a second. It's now like 30 frames.
Yeah, it was nice.
So
it was smooth.
So yeah, that's all I'm going to say about this at this point. You can't trust what's going on with this. You can't. If I was an investor already investing, I would be pissed off because it makes it look like an amateur project. If I already have my money into this project and I see that video put out, I'm pissed.
Yeah, I mean, I don't,
because now you have people like us pouring this stuff out, and it makes your company look like amateurs and unprofessional.
Yeah, he's so lost in thinking that the licenses and the branding is important that he's at the point where he's pushing literal web games as
free web games, besides the free mobile games,
as features, as selling points for his system. It's nuts. You'd be better off with no branding partners. If all you're going to have on there is cheap trash that you can get for free elsewhere.
It's nuts. Let's see. Care Bears Care Carts. It's a free download. I can get it on, let's see, I can get it on Amazon
can
apps
you?
And games.
Click oh. through. I don't think you can. I clicked through and it took me to a dead link.
According to this, I can try to get it for my Fire TV stick, but you're saying it should be gone by now.
When I clicked through a couple of links, when I finally clicked through and got to the point where it would get to the app, it said that page was no longer available.
Oh, I now own it on my Fire Stick. I just clicked on it.
All
so
right.
I will give you my Care Bear Care Carts review via my Apple. They're free. Again, they're free smart TV games. They are. You can click on your Samsung Smart TV right now. There are games on there that you can download and play, like shooters, and there are like physics, like Evel Knievel type of games you can play. So that's the stature of game you're looking at right here on this console, unfortunately. So anything else to add here? There was comments on NeoGAF. Obviously, everyone trashed this. It's not just 5 haters out there. No one really is liking how this is looking.
Yeah. Nothing to say.
You can get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking easy, fun, and affordable.
HelloFresh offers convenient delivery right to your doorstep for easy home cooking with the family. The recipes are easy to follow and quick to make, with simple steps and pictures to guide you along the way. HelloFresh cuts out stressful meal planning and grocery store trips so you can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table, usually in about 30 minutes or less. HelloFresh offers many delicious options every week so you can break out of your recipe rut and try new things. And they offer stuff for everyone, including people who want a low-calorie diet, who are vegetarian, and there's kid-friendly recipes too. Just this past week, we did barramundi with hash, so fish. Uh-huh. We also got ravioli with a cream sauce, and we did a stir-fry as well. So they really kind of hit all sorts of different bases. You're not just doing burgers and sandwiches and things like that.
All sorts of palate angles. Yeah, I made the feeling chili, the chicken stir fry with the green beans, and it was delicious. It was healthy and delicious. It's like, what more do you want?
Yeah, it was great. HelloFresh delivers pre-portioned ingredients so you're not overbuying, which is a burden on the planet and your wallet. The pre-portioned stuff is a big thing. No food waste, especially if you're busy, if you're doing a lot of work. Getting those ingredients pre-portioned and delivered to you keeps you from buying a big bag of something that you're not going to use all of.
Yeah, then you throw it out, or it's like, wow, it adds up when you purchase a lot of stuff and you don't use it throughout the year. So HelloFresh is committed to making fresh, delicious foods available now more than ever, and has taken extra steps to keep its employees and customers safe, including contactless delivery, tamper-proof packaging, and team member wellness checks. They've also donated over 2.5 million meals to charity in 2019, and this year they're stepping up food donations to local communities amid the coronavirus crisis. All right. You can go to HelloFresh.com/CUPodcast80 and use code CUPodcast80 to get a total of $80 off 5 boxes, including free shipping on your first box. Again, get $80 off and free shipping on America's number one meal kit by going to HelloFresh.com/CUPodcast80. Get cooking. Get going with HelloFresh. All right. Ian, GameStop is looking to partner with Microsoft. They signed an agreement for a strategic accord, is what they called it.
Yes, their stocks jumped 27% after a strategic partnership with Microsoft Corp gave investors fresh optimism that the video game retailer can turn around its business. That's from MSN. So basically what's happening is Microsoft, basically their cloud services will be used at GameStop stores. They'll be using Microsoft programs for inventory, finance, they say e-commerce, so probably on their website. Workers will use Microsoft Surface tablets, and GameStop will offer Xbox All Access, a monthly service for the Xbox gaming console.
They'll just sell it for them.
Yeah, they'll sell it for them.
They'll push it.
So basically what it is it looks like, you know, Microsoft will officially have their software, you know, in the store in terms of how the store functions and operates, and they will also push some Microsoft services. I don't think that this really amounts to much of anything long term. This is not going to magically make people suddenly desire physical video games again. This isn't going to get people back into the store. This is one of those things that I personally don't always understand. Just because something happens with a big name doesn't mean it's going to save the business. I still look at this as, you know, GameStop stringing themselves along just a little bit longer. But yeah, I don't think it's going to... I don't see how this is going to be a boon for them in any way, shape, or form. It's fresh money. They're going to do some Microsoft advertising, but...
I don't know how much Microsoft is paying them.
Right.
They say, hey, you're going to use our... we'll give you the tablets for free. We'll give you the tablets, or maybe we'll give you a little bit of money, but now every store has... You know, like in the NFL, they use the Surface tablets. It's a endorsement deal for that.
Right.
But for this, it's just like, you think Microsoft, you know, do you think that Microsoft was held over a barrel by GameStop? They can...
Oh, absolutely
they
not.
Make the terms of the agreement.
Yeah.
And GameStop be like, yes, please. Yes, yes, Microsoft. We'll do whatever you want.
Right, because they need whatever they can get at this point.
Yeah, so they'll probably, you know, they'll get like a percentage if they sell the, you know, they sell the Game Pass deal, whatever, they'll get a percentage, GameStop, like in their store. They'll be incentivized to push it more, probably. But from what I saw, they want like
They want, like, employees walking around with the Surface tablets, like, interacting with the customers, I guess, to be more, like, close to them, like an Apple Store person, and just point out, oh, here's your gaming experience, and, like, these are the games you should be looking at, and, like, showing them, like, that's... They want to, I guess, try to transform their stores via this?
Yeah, is it that, or is it like, do you have such and such in stock? Well, let me just check this handy-dandy Surface tablet, like, instead of walking over to the shelf and looking.
Because GameStop stores are not set up like Apple stores. Apple stores are open and free, and you can sit down, and you can go on the tablets or the phones or the computers. It's very bright. GameStop stores are like...
It's very bright. Yes, it is.
Are you know, more cluttered. You have lots of shelves. So you can't necessarily transform the stores easily because you have a limited amount of space, for sure. But now you have to retrain all your employees to use these tablets and interact differently with your customers. And I just see this as being a huge pain in the neck. I don't see what GameStop gets out of this overall. If they think that it might be a better customer service experience, I don't think adding a tablet's going to automatically increase the camaraderie between the employees and your customer. I just don't see that.
No.
You have to have that as a working relationship. Like, it's hard to have a GameStop store that's been around for 20 years and employees working there forever. All of a sudden, okay, well, you have to basically retrain how you work, and your customers have to be cool with it too. Maybe I don't want a GameStop employee approaching me with a Surface tablet, getting in my face and telling me about all the new releases and trying to learn about me. I can picture them, Ian, doing them asking, well, what type of games you like to play? Click, click, click. You know, what's your demographic? And then, oh, here's your recommendations for
sure.
You know, you're like turning around on you like, I'm here to pick up a game that I'm looking to buy. I'm looking to buy a birthday present. I'm looking for a Christmas present. I don't necessarily need this all these extra steps in between. It's weird to me to see this.
Yeah, it's strange. They're at the throwing shit at a wall and seeing what sticks phase. I think we will probably see more weird decisions by GameStop in the coming months. We already have, from wanting to be a lifestyle center. I mean,
yes.
to
lifestyles.
This shit. They are desperate, and no amount of, you know, 27% stock surges is going to fix this.
So are they counting on a similar deal now that the deal with Microsoft, that Sony's going to do a deal with them to push the Sony Game Pass, what's the Sony one called?
PS Now.
Are they looking for that to wet their beaks there as well? Because if I'm Sony, I'd be pissed off. Okay, you have a partnership with Microsoft. Does it mean you're not going to push our stuff as much? Like, is that what they're going for? Or at this point, GameStop doesn't care. They got to make as much money as they can before they're done.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Because obviously they're going to make some more. This will be their best year, best quarter. The year is bad though, because before COVID they were doing horribly.
Yes.
But the new consoles are coming out, so they're going to get some revenue that way. I don't know how much money they're making on these consoles. I have no idea how much they're making.
Not much. I can't imagine they're making much,
because they're lost leaders most of the time. These new consoles for Sony and Microsoft, they're not making money on them.
No, they're not making money on them. Yeah, so I would imagine that the amount of money that a place like GameStop makes on them is slim to none. I mean, I've said it a bunch before, but one of the reasons, there's a lot of reasons why we don't deal in new stuff anymore in terms of like sealed games, but the margins are just, the amount that you have to sell to turn a profit on the margins that they offer you is insane. I mean, the best case scenario, you might make $10 after tax on a new game, but most of the time you're making
after tax. You mean federal tax and sales tax, or what do you mean?
Like, yeah, after like you pay back, like, after you pay the sales tax, you might make $10 on a game, but more often than not, it's somewhere between like $2 and $5. I mean, it's crazy.
Well, that's before the business pays taxes on that revenue.
Yeah, you know, games, so like, games coming in for, you know, $55.99 a fucking copy, and we sell it for $60. It's nuts.
So it's a volume play, but as Ian always says, they make their money on selling extra, you know, controllers and accessories and
right. Things
like that. That's how they make their money. But is it enough? I guess we'll see first quarter 2021. I mean, they're already planning on closing 500 stores even before this. They know the revenue is going to be bumped up. So obviously the stock jumps up. The stock has nothing to do with the health of the business. Like I repeat that. People that tell you it means they're saved don't know anything about business or stocks. That tell you that.
We're on an irreversible path for GameStop. GameStop is not going to be more needed as time goes on. it's just going to continue to get more and more irrelevant. You can't save that.
I'm looking at SeekingAlpha.com. The guy wrote the article said that he officially confirmed that with GameStop that the following quote from their press release specifically refers to a revenue sharing agreement. GameStop and Microsoft will both benefit from the customer acquisition and lifetime revenue value of each gamer brought into the Xbox ecosystem. They're going to get a cut of Game Pass that they sell. They're going to get a cut. I don't know if it's 10%, 20%. They're going to get a cut.
Which means that I have a feeling that regional managers are going to start breathing down managers and employees' necks again, pushing sales. So working at GameStop is going to get fucking nightmarishly hellish again, too. I truly feel bad for anyone who is going to be going through this holiday season working at a GameStop. For many reasons, it's going to be a nightmare.
But again, I'm trying to think. It's great for Microsoft. They get free advertisement for their Game Pass, and it's worth it, whatever, if they give 10% to GameStop.
I really don't see anything that GameStop gets out of this. Some free fucking trinkets.
Hey, we got a warehouse of Microsoft services laying around. We'll give you some. You know what I mean? Like, that's okay.
Yeah. We can replace your system that's working fine now with a different system that you're going to have to retrain all of your employees in on.
Yeah, that's fine. But if I'm in the store... I mean, how many people that are buying an Xbox console at this point don't know about Game Pass? Like, how many don't? That's what they're pushing to the front. So if I'm in GameStop, unless I'm getting a deal, I'm like, okay, I don't want to waste my time. I'll just sign up in 2 seconds at home. I'll click the button. My credit card's already on. I'll click the button and get Game Pass. Like, why am I doing it in store?
Yeah, I mean, that is something that should be noted, is that you have access, whether it's on like Sony, PlayStation, or Xbox, you have access to all of it. You don't need to buy this service from GameStop. When you turn your system on, I guarantee you within five clicks, you can be on the page to have that purchased.
Buy now.
They're going to make it. They're going to make it very easy. It might even be two clicks.
I was
going to
say, now I'm thinking about it, if I get it from GameStop, how am I going to... They're going to give me a code then? I can put that, go online and go to the store?
They're going
to
sell you a fucking code.
Oh, fuck that. Like, come
on. They're going to sell you a code.
I'll just go home and buy it. I already got my credit card input. There.
All right.
Well... Anyway, it's interesting to see this. I actually... I'm now curious to see once this is fully implemented. I'm not sure how quickly they can implement this. I guess maybe they can do it before the end of the year. How quickly can they do this and roll us out to all the stores?
I think it would be a nightmare for them to try to do it right now.
But you think so?
They probably will.
Well, getting the services out, I guess they'll have their own software on the surface.
They need to do it within the next couple weeks before holiday business hits, or it's going to be a nightmare trying to train people on how to do that stuff while experiencing a surge of business. October is really like your last chance to get anything done before the holidays hit, and if you don't get it done before then, you might as well push it off into the new year.
So this is actually a good article. I'll give him credit. His name is Justin Dofirala. He said that Nintendo and Sony were likely shocked about this revenue sharing deal, especially Sony, because they were usually pretty close to GameStop. Says, although the Nintendo relationship was recently warmed up with the addition of Reggie Fils-Aimé, this was evidenced on the last earnings call when George Sherman, our buddy from AutoZone, said, "We receive more than our fair share of Nintendo Switches, and we sell these very rapidly." You think Reggie's actually putting in the work? You think he's calling up Mr. GameStop and saying, "Hey, listen, man, we got to work out a deal here." I wonder if that's actually if it actually helped. If Reggie's just sipping on mimosas somewhere and doing these calls every couple of weeks.
I don't know anything about Reggie's personal life or what he's doing now, but yeah, I don't know.
Sale, according to this article, sale of GameStop European operations appears imminent. Wow, this is the first I'm hearing about this. This might be a thing that happens in Europe. Really. Wow, this is a good article. I wish I read this before the podcast. I just found this right now. So anyway, so check out this article. I'll link it from Seeking Alpha. It has a lot of details. Wow, if they're looking to sell their European operations, that's news to me. This October, it's breaking, Ian, October 12th. That's an update.
Oh, update.
So there you go. There you have it. So I'm looking forward to going into GameStop, Ian, and seeing people with those blue, ugly surfaces that I only see on. I don't know anyone who owns a Microsoft service. I just see Bill Belichick try to fumble with his on the Patriots sideline.
Yeah, I'm old and crabby. So, some exciting potential news out of Sega the other day. So, Yosuke Okunari is a Sega staffer. This is coming from a Nintendo Life article by Damian McFerrin, who has been heavily involved with many of the company's recent retro ventures, including the Sega Ages line and the Mega Drive Mini, has hinted that the company may tackle a Dreamcast Mini. They said, there was a quote when they were speaking to Famitsu, that he says, next we're considering concepts similar to the Mega Drive Mini. If I had to name some ideas, something like an SG-1000 Mini or a Dreamcast Mini. That's interesting. They said they won't be able to complete the next mini console this year, due to its scope by this time next year, or in other words, 2 years. So it probably sometime next year is when we would look at seeing another mini console from Sega. I want a Dreamcast Mini to be a thing so bad, but the way he said it, I would want to know the tone, because saying something like an SG-1000 Mini sounds very jokish to me. I mean, it's interesting, but the market...
No one would buy that here.
The market for something like an SG-1000 Mini would be nothing. At least in the U.S.
For those out there, that's the pre-master system.
Yeah, pre-master system.
That's like the Sega ColecoVision, like something in that realm. Yes. You know what I mean? Like,
and honestly, it would be neat. I would play it would be neat. But that's what I'm saying. I don't know if this is. And they continue to joke a little bit.
Well, I was actually joking. Now I'm looking. I said ColecoVision. I'm looking on the Wikipedia. They had Congo Bongo and Sega Galaga and Flicky. So it was like the ColecoVision.
Yes,
that they had. Okay,
yeah, it was.
And Golden 13, which I own.
They continue to joke a little bit. The Famitsu interviewer suggests that they could miniaturize the R360 machine. The R360 is the huge arcade machine that Galaxy Force 2 used that can literally turn you almost upside down.
Oh, holy shit.
When you're in it, it looks like a big sphere. You've never seen an R360?
Was that the one I told you about that used to be on Casino Pier in the late 80s, early 90s?
I think there was like a half one and a full one. Look up R360. Okay. Galaxy Force 2 had some very interesting fucking motion cabinets. But they said that, you know, they joked about maybe even developing a Walk the Dog Mini, because Sega has a dog walking arcade game. But a Dreamcast Mini is something that I think a lot of people have said that they would like to see. And I think a Dreamcast Mini would do very well. I think a Dreamcast Mini would be pretty easy for them to put together, too, because...
First-party games, they have a lot of them.
Exactly.
Just like the Genesis, they put on a lot of them.
At that point, especially by the time the Dreamcast comes around, they didn't have a ton of support from third-party developers, but Sega's internal teams were firing on all cylinders then. Like, they were putting out some of their best shit. So it would be easy to do even just like an arcade focused one. You know, you could That's license sick. Soul Calibur, but you could do Crazy Taxi, you could do Sega Bass Fishing.
Yes, Ian, they'll have Bass Fishing for you. It was a big game.
I wouldn't be surprised if it was on there. But there's also, I think it's very easy to just think of, off the top of my head, tons of Dreamcast titles that would be great on it, including Sonic Adventure, Power Stone.
So you have to get what, Namco involved, Capcom involved a little bit, and license some of that stuff.
Namco and Capcom were the big contributors, and I think
if you get them,
I mean, you've got all the fighting games that Capcom put out. So.
You couldn't get the old NFL 2K games because the licensing is gone, unfortunately.
Right.
That's a shame because people love those games, NBA 2K, NFL 2K. Maybe you can get Seaman on there? That'd be interesting.
Would be. You'd need the Dreamcast Mini built with mini microphone included.
Well, that's something we can talk about. The controllers. Would there be a built-in VMU on the controllers? This could be expensive. If you do that,
a little screen.
I would think you would have to have a VMU. That's like sort of part of the character of the Dreamcast.
I feel like you could probably build that in.
That'd be cheap nowadays, wouldn't it?
You could do it. I mean, the Hyperkin put out a Duke controller, the original Microsoft, like the Fat Hands controller.
Okay,
and it has a LCD screen on there that plays the fucking Microsoft startup when you turn it on. So
yeah,
you could totally do a dot matrix display for a VMU on there.
I think you could probably do like 30 games. Do like maybe 15 to 20 Sega, 15 Sega games, 15 third party, and you could have something that would probably sell like Like the $80, it would sell like hotcakes if you did this right.
I mean, it would probably be $100. I think it would be 100. I think it'd be 100.
So it didn't work out well for the PlayStation.
Yeah, but it didn't work out well for the PlayStation because the PlayStation was dog shit.
Well, the games were trash.
They didn't even use the right versions for a lot of those.
They didn't give you the analog controllers either.
They didn't give you the analog controllers either. But I mean, the TurboGrafx Mini was 100, and it seems to be doing just fine.
Well, I don't know how many they actually sold, though. But does it have to be two controllers, or if it's too expensive with the VMU, you buy one separately?
I think they would have to do two controllers, because there was a good amount of multiplayer stuff on there, too.
So you definitely need, looking at the Sega published stuff, you got to have Crazy Taxi,
Choo Choo Rocket, Jet Set Radio.
Virtua Tennis for your sports game.
Virtua Tennis has licensed characters in it.
Ah, fuck. They'd have to take out the names.
But
they can still do it, though.
That was one that I thought of initially, but yes, it's unfortunately it is licensed.
You're going to have Soul Calibur.
Space Channel 5. I think Space Channel 5 would be an obvious one.
Sonic Adventures, obviously.
The Sonic Adventures, the Power Stones. In terms of fighting games from back then, Dead or Alive 2 was big, but all the Capcom ones, Street Fighter Alpha 3, Street Fighter 3 Third Strike, and Double Impact.
I don't think you're going to be able to get all those on there easily, but I think Power Stone would be cheap to get 1 and 2. It would be like, all right, they'll give us those.
Capcom is license heavy. I don't know why you think that would be difficult. They've been doing... I mean, they've been...
For the Street Fighter games? Have they been on a lot of these movies?
Well, I mean, we haven't had anything that's really had that, but I'm just saying Capcom has been willing to work with Nintendo through the SNES and NES minis.
Well, I guess they had on the Super Nintendo Classic, they had Street Fighter 2.
So, yeah, they did. I would be surprised if you didn't see Third Strike on there.
How about Mr. Driller? You get your Mr. Driller?
I could have Mr. Driller on there. Daytona would probably have to be on there. Sega Rally would be on there.
Daytona. Yeah, how did I forget about Daytona? Absolutely. You think they'll get Shenmue on there?
Yes. Shenmue is Sega, so I think they'd be able to get Shenmue on there just fine.
I don't know if it's a different relationship now with the new one. Okay.
No, I mean, I don't know what the situation is with the new one, but with Shenmue 1 and 2, I think they would be able to do that. Yes, I think there's lots of games that you could put on there. Some that I would want to see that aren't as well known. I'd like to see Ooga Booga on there.
What about any of the light gun games now?
And Armada.
You won't be able to get Virtua Cop. You won't be able to get what was that 007 type of shooting? Confidential
Mission.
You won't be able to get those, unfortunately.
No.
God damn it! Can we figure out the light gun thing for these new TVs?
Well, wasn't there a light gun that people were talking about recently?
Yeah, it's what the hell? Yes, but like I mean, like a product for the masses, not like these Kickstarter things. There's not one that's like been. The technology has been co-opted into all these products yet. What the hell is it called? Light gun.
Sinden light gun or something?
Yes, that one.
Something like that. Yeah, Sinden light gun.
Yeah. So, but they got to license this for their consoles, though. That's the thing. I don't think it's going to happen, unfortunately. Because to me, that's the last console that really was a light gun console, isn't it? I don't count the Wii. I mean, it's not really a light gun. It's a fucking control.
I mean, if you want to get specific, no, because it was an IR pointer. But that was the last system that had light gun games on it. That was the last system that had, like, Ghost Mission was put out on there.
For the Wii or the...
The Wii.
Yeah, but they're not... But it's a fucking attachment you put the Wiimote in. That's what I mean.
I'm just saying, it's a light gun game. It's the same style of game.
That Nyko trigger... was so hard to press on that for the Wii. That was like, for some reason, it was so the give on that. Sorry. Anyway. So that'd be a bummer to me. Obviously, you know, it's not the heart and soul of the system, but the light guns games were good that Sega put out. I loved Ghost Mission on the Wii. I loved it. It was great. Yeah. Okay. If this comes out, I think, all right, you think $100 it'll do all right. Well, they are more modern games too, a little bit more than the PlayStation. They're a little bit. So, get a King of Fighters on there, maybe.
They did have King of Fighters 98 on there, so yeah, they called it 99, even though it wasn't.
How dare they, Ian? How dare they?
It's really fucking stupid.
There were some trashy third party games. Oh, there were some obviously ports like Tony's Hawk Pro Skater, but no one really thinks about Dreamcast and Pro Skater. God, the awful WWF games. That's right. Forgot about that.
Royal Rumble was very, very bad.
Is that the one that was in the arcade? Mm-hmm. Okay, that was not fun.
It was interesting in the arcade for 5 minutes. It certainly was not a game that ever needed to be ported home.
How about the remember those great ECW games?
No, they ran on the same Acclaim engine that Warzone and Attitude.
Right now. Those games are getting reviewed right now for a certain guidebook. Those good old N64 Acclaim wrestling games.
They're bad.
They're not that good. Okay, well there you go. We'll see what this happens. Maybe a year from now, we'll see. And the good news is that obviously. The emulation on Dreamcast is above a Saturn,
yes.
So it's a little bit easier. And you think about, I kept going back to when they do a Saturn mini. I think it'd be diminishing returns versus doing the Dreamcast, just skipping it and doing the Dreamcast. I just think the Dreamcast has more of a beloved statue, like cult status than the Saturn. I think it would just do a lot better, and people would enjoy it more. And the games are probably overall better in terms of the variety that you could get on that console. So, all right. So this is a Kickstarter, Ian, that's come up. This is a book that I kind of knew was in the works for years. It's called A Smoke and Mirrors, The Rise and Fall of a Video Game Antipreneur, the official story of the Retro VGS and the Coleco Chameleon. So it's already funded. It was a small goal of around, I think it was $1,800 U.S., This is a book being done by Mike James, who is UK Mike. He used to be one of the guys on the Retro Gaming. Well, is this still around, the Retro Gaming Roundup podcast? It was him.
Seems like something you maybe should have known before talking.
Hey, I knew about it. Let's see. Retro Gaming Roundup. So it was him. It was Mike Kennedy, who was behind the Retro VGS and the Chameleon. And it was Scott, and I believe one or two others that would cycle in and out. So,
what the hell was Mike Kennedy's name on Atari? Just like Parrot Hammer or something like that?
Something like that. Something like
weird.
That. No, it's still around.
Bird juice.
It's still around. They do one a month, Retro Gaming Roundup. There you go. Free publicity, RetroGamingRoundup.com. They do one a month podcast. They've been doing them forever. So anyway, so Mike James has written this book. He's reached out to people that were involved in it. He reached out to people like the mysterious Mr. Lee, who was Sean Robinson, who was the guy that took Mike Kennedy for a ride in terms of helping slap together the infamous Super Nintendo mini prototype, and just took lots of money from Mike. But okay, so this Kickstarter, the book's going to come out. So the money is to consult with a lawyer to basically make sure he can't be sued by publishing this. That's what the money's for. That's
right.
Why it's such a small amount. It's $1,800. Because obviously there's people that were involved with this project that could have done something allegedly criminal, including Mike Kennedy himself. So he wants to make sure he's legally covered. Obviously, you can publish things about people as long as it's true,
right?
That you're fine. I can publish something about someone that's horrible, or talk about something and it's horrible, as long as it's true, or I even think it's true based upon my knowledge of it, then you're fine. But he wants to make sure. Plus, in the UK, I think it's a lot easier to get sued for libel and slander versus the US, just from what I know. The burden
it
of
is.
Proof,
yes,
the burden of proof is a lot lower there. So this is an official account of events that led to the evolution of Game Gavel. Which is what the website that Mike ran, which was basically the eBay for video games, Retro Magazine, which I wrote a few articles for, which was what Mike Kennedy, he was the publisher of that and ran that, Retro VGS and Coleco Chameleon, written by somebody who was involved and had inside information that has never been published before. It is a factual account of events, but more than that, it is a human story of the man behind the Game Gavel Network and the Retro VGS / Coleco Chameleon, and shows how one man's dream can quickly become a nightmare. I would argue that it wasn't that quick, but okay. Mike Kennedy set out with good intentions and wanted to produce a video game console, but somewhere along the way, he lost control of his vision, his empire, and his livelihood. So, okay. So if you don't know much about Mike Kennedy, I met Mike Kennedy at... He'd be at these... Southern California SC3 Southern California gaming meetups that I think used to still go on even last year, like twice a year in like Orange County. And then he ran the Game Gavel, and then he also, you know, he ran Retro Magazine, which lasted I think a year only, or a little over a year, and there was problems with that because people weren't getting the magazine, people weren't paid. I wasn't paid until I basically said, I'm not writing anymore until you pay me my meager wage, especially when I was one of the few people names that was used to promote the fucking magazine. It was like me, Sean Baby, a couple other people that were promoted, Chris Kohler were promoted, and like that was it to promote this. So my interactions with Mike were always not necessarily dubious, but you know, keep you at arm's length basically when it came to this stuff. Obviously, if you followed the CU podcast at all, going back to 2015 when we started covering the Retro VGS, maybe it was early 2015 when we covered it, or late 2014 when this first was surmised. The Retro VGS, Ian, was to be a cartridge-based, no DLC, no internet required.
No bugs.
No bugs in our games.
How do you do it? You simply make games without bugs. What do you happens if there's a bug? Well, you just tell them to take the bug out.
It was to be the Retro VGS, a throwback console using Atari Jaguar console shells because Mike had acquired the mold. He bought one of the molds out there. Famously, there's dental equipment that is in the Atari Jaguar console case because the, yes, mold somehow became available. Mike bought the mold and said, well, Ian, I got a case for a console. Let's now design a console. Let's design the hardware after the shape of the console. Doesn't that sound familiar with something that's trying to be produced today? It does a little bit. But anyway, so
it was very bizarre at the time because it totally seemed like then and now that it was absolutely, oh, I've got this shell. And they said that, too. They said that. We've got the hard part done. We've got the tooling done. The shell is done. They acted like that was like their big foot in the door.
That's not the hard part. That might be the expensive part. It's not that's not the hard part.
Expensive,
building a shell,
yes,
around your board and your goodies, your guts of your console. So obviously, I mean, we did about 10 to 12 videos on the Retro VGS, then Coleco Chameleon. So I became the Coleco Chameleon. God, that name is awful. After Coleco Holdings LLC. Somehow they came to probably a license agreement with good old Chris Cardillo with Mike Kennedy. And so we're going to rebrand this, Ian. We're going to rebrand this to Coleco Chameleon. And that was after, I believe, the failed Indiegogo for the Retro VGS. God, I don't remember the timeline. And we covered this like the most out of everyone online covered this.
Yeah, I can no longer remember the time frame between Retro VGS not succeeding and Coleco Chameleon coming into play.
The retro,
the same thing, but
the Retro VGS campaign was, I think that was fall of 2015. That sounds correct.
Okay.
5 years ago, yes. And then that they canceled it early because it was going to be an utter failure. They asked for Mike Kennedy asked for $2 million on Indiegogo. And again, why is it important?
Because they don't require a prototype.
Does not require a hardware prototype. Kickstarter at least has some threshold of making sure you're not a con artist or bullshitter. If you're doing hardware of anything, a toaster oven, an LED light show console, you have to have a prototype, working prototype shown on your campaign. Indiegogo, you don't have that. So that's one of the reasons we railed against this, mm-hmm, as a danger to not just people getting ripped off, it's a danger to the retro gaming community. And Mike was promoting this. He promoted this at a couple of gaming conventions along the way as well. It wasn't just like he came out of nowhere. He had a reputation with the magazine and Game Gavel. So he had a built-in base to at least promote this. So that's why it wasn't like laughed off immediately by everyone. I don't know how it wasn't. Because Ian and I, from the start, were like, this is a bad idea. But there are people giving this a chance for whatever reason. People did infomercial interviews on their YouTube channels. People said, do you think it's going to succeed? Maybe, maybe not. So when it came crashing down and it hurt inside with the Coleco Chameleon within like 6 months after this Retro VGS failed Indiegogo, it wasn't just an I told you so. It was like, Jesus Christ, you guys should have seen this coming. I don't see how you didn't. So this book hopefully gets into more of the nitty gritty, and it's going to get into stuff like, well, who did Mike get money from? Because there was money put into this. Mike allegedly, you know, he took money from family and friends to help finance this.
Right.
When you're buying the mold, I mean, that money has to come from somewhere. When you're you know, hiring people to help do like your awkward hardware videos, your engineer, like this money has to come from somewhere. So apparently this, from what I know, like from what I heard, I'm not for sure, this might have ended, you know, his marriage potentially. You know, he was in ruins after this, after his dream of doing a console here. Like, you have this, these grandiose dreams of doing a console that everyone's going to love. I'm going to make money off of this. I'm going to be the man. And then you get it over your head, and then you become you're a scammer at that point. Once you show up at a toy fair with a console that's a Super Nintendo Mini taped inside of a fucking Jaguar shell at the New York fucking toy fair in 2016.
Remember the what was the adapter card or whatever that they put in the show?
Oh, they put it in was it SD2 SNES multi card?
No, I'm talking about the second prototype.
You mean the
clear shell?
You mean the clear shell with the capture card put inside?
That was the capture card.
That was the final blow.
Yeah.
After the only question that remains to me, once Mike got in over his head and realized I don't have a prototype for the toy show, did Mike know that what Sean Robinson mocked up for him? Because the story is that Sean Robinson said to Mike Kennedy before the toy fair in 2016, was that February 2016? Like, don't touch it, don't look at it, don't let people look at the back. So if you're Mike Kennedy and you're running this game console company, wouldn't you be curious about why can't I look at this, or what the hell's in this?
Yeah.
why does the back of this look like the back of a Super Nintendo Mini, which Mike owned, which it's going to come out in the book, like Mike owned. It's like, why? Why is there a Super Nintendo AV out on the back of this? Why, Ian? Why? Why am I on my prototype console? Is this like a Super Nintendo on the back? Why can't it play a Super Nintendo flash card? Like, you should know that. Like, So from what I know from talking to UK Mike, who wrote this Mike Games, there's going to be a few people that come off very, very badly in this book. Very badly.
Yeah.
Because they might have known things that didn't act, or they were in on this in one degree or another. So I'm looking forward to reading this book. I really am. Because this is going to be... But I also going to feel bad,
I have a feeling
though.
It'll be a quick read, too.
But I'm also going to feel bad, though, for any family members that got taken for a ride, or friends got taken for a ride by a man of confidence, basically, saying that. To me, it's almost like, well, you know, did he lose his way, or did he think it was going to be harder than what it was once he got into it? Either way, you should not get into a business you have no fucking clue about, or have no idea about, just because you managed to get a magazine published or ran a gaming website does not mean you can make a video game console.
Right.
Which, again, to me, it seems like the hardest fucking thing in the world to do is to make a new video game console. It just seems like just an act of craziness to think that you can pull it off and have something that not just turns a profit, is actually be something that's of decent quality and that'll actually last and stick around. Like, it just seems like it's tough, you know? So, yeah, there you go. $2 million. You imagine what would have happened if it raised the $2 million and everyone was taken for a ride in fleece outside of the investors? And that, it would have been the biggest scandal in the retro gaming scene, like, ever. Like, it would have been...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it splintered the community even as that, because, you know, people went after a certain YouTuber. People went after me for reporting on it, you know, for a week or two, when Ian was out from the podcast for that, like, 1 week. So, like, it was it was a thing. It was a weird thing. So, but you know what? I stand by every fucking word I said about this. I'd imagine you do as well.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't go back on any of it. We were proven right in the end.
Yeah.
Patrick!
Yes, sir.
We have a Patreon.
We do, Ian?
Pat, you want to tell me how you access that Patreon?
Well, Ian, you open up your Netscape Navigator and you go to http://www.patreon.com/CU podcast.
And what do we get there, Patrick?
Well, you can give us your money for things. That's what you do on the Patreon. So you get the full video accessible on Tuesday night after Pat slaves away and edits everything and renders it out and uploads it to YouTube. And then you also get weekly writings from Ian, who writes once every 9 days on average, but it's getting closer to 7 as years go by.
Yeah.
Versus 14, like it used to be some months. Sorry. And then also you get a monthly Google Hangout with Ian, which is probably going to happen this Saturday or Sunday.
This Sunday.
Probably
the Sunday before work.
You also vote on a weekly Patreon. poll topic each week.
Darn tootin'.
And this week, Ian, in third place, what do you miss about gaming conventions? 23%. We miss a lot. Miss a lot. That'll be its own topic eventually, I guarantee you.
Yes.
In second place, besides Super Mario 35, what retro games could make good Battle Royale games? 26%. We already gave one away last time, but we can go into more detail. And in first place, Ian, with the bullet, what console libraries are worth collecting right now? Right now, Ian. Due to a high likelihood that they will soon spike in value and rarity.
The value! I think if you are looking for anything that is rare or hard to find on the Xbox 360 or the PlayStation 3, right now is absolutely the time to buy it. I don't think PlayStation 3 or Xbox 360 game prices will ever be lower than they are now, and that is something that I have learned... just from being at the store for 14 years now.
14 years?
Thereabouts, yeah. 13 and a half, 14 years.
Feels like 12.
It's two generations ago is always when that stuff appears to be the most worthless. And it usually starts to go back up in price at the end of the following generation.
Because it's not retro yet to people. But it's not new, so it's trash. So it's like this weird in between.
So at the start of the PS4 and the Xbox One, PS2 and Xbox stuff was particularly cheap. And I wanted to see any of that stuff about as much as I want to see 360 or PS3 games now, which is like not at all. But PS2 stuff and even some Xbox titles as we approach this next generation, generation 9, I think this is going to be, as we approach generation 9, the prices are definitely starting to creep up again on PlayStation 2 stuff that is hard to find or particularly desirable. The horror games, the horror games, the RPGs, the lesser known like sleeper hits, all of that stuff is climbing back up in price. Right now on the 360, in the PS3 too, but especially on the 360, because the 360 early on the 360 did so well and just sold so many titles in terms of volume.
The volume.
There's just so much of it that it's very easy to come by. I was kind of talking about this online a little bit recently. It's kind of the point where the people who have this stuff want it just about as much as we do, which is not at all. People will come in and, you know, when people call about 360 or PS3, I try to buffer their expectations a little bit. You know, I'm like, yes, we do buy 360 and PS3 stuff. I will let you know that it is not worth much right now. But they're always like, oh, what, like, you know, like $4 or $5 a game? I'm like, we're looking at like $1 to $3 for a lot of them.
Mm.
And they're like, oh, okay. And they'll come in and they'll get rid of it. You could just make up a number and they'd take it. There are people who come in with that stuff and I look through it. I'm like, I don't need any of this or it's too scratched. They will gladly leave it. People will give this shit away because they just want it out of their, they want it out of their closets. They want it out of their living rooms, their homes. Every time I say something like this, I always feel like, well, maybe this is going to be the generation that no one cares about. But we thought that about PS2 and Xbox to a degree, and that has gotten popular again. Despite the fact that right now no one wants to look at Xbox 360 games, there are going to be some that are going to be desirable later on, and those are the ones that you want to get right now. Get the shooters, get the smaller, lesser-known titles, you know, get your Death Smiles, get your Raiden 4, get that sort of stuff right now while it's inexpensive. Well, as far as what's, like, popular right now, stuff that you don't want to pass up on if you see a good deal on it, GameCube. GameCube right now is insanely popular, and the prices have shot up because of COVID. But that is something that happened during COVID, and I would say that if you're out, you know, if you're at a garage sale, if you're at a flea market, if you're at a Goodwill or something like that, and you see, you know, big name GameCube titles and they're not expensive, get them because they should be more expensive. And it's a combination of timing and COVID has made that just timing in terms of the people who grew up with it are now of the age where they have money to buy this stuff, and that's how these retro systems always get popular. It's always when kids who grew up with them now have their own money and can rebuy their childhoods.
Yeah, plus GameCube, some of those third-party games, they didn't make a huge amount of those, probably.
No, they didn't.
So, like, spoilers, I was editing a Flea Market Madness in the video, and then I saw it. There was a $10 table. That's why I didn't buy it at the time. I saw Resident Evil, Code Veronica, over there. I didn't buy it.
Even at $10, that's a pretty good price, even then. But yeah.
Well, back then, I think it was like $30, according to price, something like that. I didn't buy it, though. I looked it up, and it was $100 buy it now for that game on eBay. I was like, what the fuck? Like, I couldn't believe that. I also didn't buy that thing because I had a PS2, and I didn't want to buy the same game another console was ever going to play. But that showed me that, okay, there's something going on here, because why would you go for that game unless you're trying to collect like a set, I guess, because that game was available elsewhere, or close to a set. So I looked up, I'm on Price Charting. Price Charting has a cool feature where you can like get the average across all the game library. So 360, Ian, this goes back to 2008. In 2008, a 360 game averaged 23 and change. Now it's at almost its lowest point. It went up a little bit the past year since COVID, everything, but it was at $8 before COVID. Now it's at $9, but still, that's really, really cheap
for an average.
The average across all 360 games, $9.
Yeah,
that's the average.
Yeah, I would say $7.99 is like the $4.99 is what most things get, and then if it's a slightly better title, $7.99 is what it gets, and then there are a handful of titles for that system that still go for $15+.
PS3 in 2008 was $32 beginning of the year. Now it's at almost its lowest point. Again, it went up slightly since COVID, but not really. The average now is $11 for a PS3 game. That's the average. GameCube, that's a little bit different. GameCube in 2018, the average game was $12. The lowest point for that was $6 in 2010. Wow. So that's during the Wii era. Which is surprising because you can still play them on the Wii. I'm surprised it was that low.
It never matters. Like, that's always nice. That's important to people who already have money invested in the games. It's not so important to people who are...
It
doesn't necessarily mean they're going to go find them. They don't want to leave that stuff behind. But, I mean, as stupid as it is, it's true. It's just like when we were kids. It's not fresh and new anymore. The last thing anyone wants to see when they get a PlayStation 5 is PlayStation 4 games.
That's true, but I went out and bought Crazy Taxi to play. It on the Wii. I did for the GameCube. So then it slowly started to trickle up. I mean, slowly. In 2015, the average GameCube game was $9.30, and then it went up to, let's see, about $11 in 2018. And then the past year, well, it was COVID, the average price has shot up from $12.25 to almost $17. Pat math, that's like a 45% increase in price on average game. That's nuts.
Yeah.
That quickly. That's insane for that.
It's wacky.
So now, like, I'm looking at, well, is this right, some of this stuff? I'm looking at some of these, like, I have some GameCube games that are probably worth money that, or at least $100, that weren't worth that much before.
There's a lot of GameCube games that are worth $100 now.
Wow, I gotta go through my GameCube games. It was funny, I looked through to make sure I didn't have that Resident Evil when I saw it on my Flea Market Madness footage. I was like, oh, I don't have that one. But even like, what, F-Zero is like $60?
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
Anytime you want to know what the price is for games, iPad, you can just give me a call down at your friendly local Luna Video.
Oh, you used to love that. I used to do that.
Two locations.
Used to do that on Sunday. Used to do that on Sunday. You'd love it. When I was at 9 a.m. Hey, you know, I found this. You want this? Shut up, Pat.
I'm going back to bed.
Yeah. So it's interesting how GameCube has done that. Does it change things just a little bit that 360 games and PS3 are the first games that require a server for some of those games to be active in order to play them? So will that affect these prices not going up as much because of that? Or will collectors not care? Or will you even have some collectors versus people that might want to play the 360 game on the new Xbox if it's backwards compatible?
Yeah, I don't think it... I mean, going back to what I said about backwards compatibility, we do see a spike per title when things are added.
Spike on the Vectrex?
Yeah. When things are added, when Modern Warfare 2 was added to Xbox One a year or two ago, we saw a brief spike in interest in the 360 version of that copy. Because if you can buy it used, you're getting it cheaper than the download price on the store. But Yeah, the server thing will be interesting to see. Also, this relates not so much to a server being necessary for the games, but what games are we going to go back to and go, oh wow, that was really broken at launch when you're no longer when if the servers go down, you no longer have it. Access to the patches. Now, honestly, it seemed with the 360 with the Xbox One. Or the Xbox Series X, it's not going to be a huge deal. Microsoft has those. Obviously, the games that are backwards compatible are going to be able to download those patches. But if you're just playing it on a 360 without any connection to the hard drive, yeah, you're not going to have a lot of very critical day one patches available. And I think we're going to, as time goes on, see a lot of these games like, okay, you have it. And this is, I understand people who like physical copies of games. I get it. But we are at a point where most games are not being released in a state where your physical copy is going to be playable, or it's going to be very, very different from the final version that you are playing. We already basically, people always say, well, they want to own their game. Well, you already don't really own the game, because it's the version you own is going to be very different than what the patched version is. So yeah, that could be interesting to see as this plays out. But I think that's going to become more of an issue with PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. It certainly was an issue with the 360 and the PS3, but not as big of an issue.
I wonder if the GameCube, because it didn't happen as much on the Super Nintendo, but it did a little bit. The library is just small enough that you can get the whole set, like 64. There's about 400, North American games, something like that. You can get the full set.
I know people who have gone for full GameCube. It's not that uncommon.
So that'll be the last one you can do that, because no one's fucking doing that for a Wii besides a couple of insane people. But for the GameCube, you can do that. Because I looked up a couple of games, like the combo, the Zelda combo Metroid is going for like $600. It's like, holy shit.
Didn't Grimsy get a full fucking Wii collection?
No.
It seems like something he would do.
That's take you years to do that.
I think he did. I'm not kidding. I think he has a full Wii collection.
Right now?
I think he had it and then sold it, but I'm fairly...
The amount of time... That's like the time to get an NES one... The Wii has so much shovelware shit that you'd have to sit there forever and just click on buying this shit or wait for some of these titles to come up that I can't imagine wanting to do that.
Yeah, Scott's a wacky boy.
Is he doing okay? He's on the floor, I think, now.
Yeah, I haven't talked to him in probably about a year, but he was good last time I talked to him.
Well, we missed him at Comic-Con this year.
I always like to see that guy.
I was really commiserate on Buffalo-ness.
Yeah.
Buffalality?
Buffalonians.
Anyway, so I think that's what's going on with GameCube, though, more so than Xbox 360. And I can't imagine someone getting a complete 360 set. It's like they'd be institutionalized. But at least for Nintendo, it kind of still makes sense for a library that's small, and there's... Well, before this past couple of years, you could probably do it for pretty cheap besides those few hard-to-find like promo and combo games, I guess. I don't remember the last time I saw that combo when I just brought up the Metroid Zelda one. I might have seen that once or twice in my life, so I don't even know where that was sold. Anyway.
Let's wrap it up!
Are you pulling the ripcord? You don't want to do the Q&A?
I got to get a cheesesteak in me.
From where?
Gaglione's.
You just want to do 5 segments?
Yeah, we can do this Q&A, I guess. Let's rip through it real quick.
Well, not too quick. Okay. This is from at Lord X Iscariot. Oh, it's not. Sorry,
no, it's
Lord.
Not.
Sorry, missed it. Sorry. Sorry about that, Lord X Iscariot. But you might get making it in the future. This Q&A is from at Samuel_Layton. Why no love for first print Japanese games? Mario and Zelda first came out in Japan, so why aren't WADA and Heritage Auctions, quote, following the flag like in other hobbies, like book collecting? It means like when there's first editions.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
Or comic books.
When it comes, a lot of times when with book collectors, you want the first printing, but you want it in the language it was printed in. So like Little Prince, which is Vani's favorite book, I got her.
Was that Hungary? Where was it? Danish?
It's French.
French? All right.
Yeah. Ideally, you know, at some point she would probably want a first French edition of that.
Sure.
You follow the flag or the language. Why don't people want do that with video games? Because the people who are interested in collecting WADA games are man babies who are interested in repurchasing their youth and not so much the historical aspect of it. That's, well, that's my take.
Very nuanced, Ian. I'm going to go a little bit different than that. I don't think they're all met. There are investors who don't give a shit about video game history.
Yes. Either way you look at it, it's not good.
They don't. If they care about video game history at all, like they claim, they would try to get the Famicom disc version of Legend of Zelda. But the reason they don't is because there's so many more of those out there that are available and easier to get in a more complete form than the fucking cellophane wrapped NES card. So they don't care.
Right.
They can't invest in those.
Right. There is. I mean. My answer was meant to sound snooty, but jerky. But
don't get us in trouble.
There are people who collect. And yes, I understand it. There are people. It's what you remember, so that's what you buy, and that's totally fine. But at some point, you know, all the people who want to do all the, the huffing and puffing about history and preserving history and stuff like that, you're lying to yourself. If it did, you would be going after the actual historically.
You would get a fucking Donkey Kong cabinet if you cared about the first appearance of Mario.
Right. So,
like, that's the first appearance of Mario. Get the fucking ROM board and get that graded.
Yeah, it is interesting to me that it does not follow, you know, the same thing that books do. That, you know, there isn't the
it doesn't follow the first of anything.
No.
Baseball cards, it doesn't follow the first or comic books, it doesn't follow anything.
Video game collecting, and this is something that I've always thought was strange about U.S. video game collecting, but it always seems to be particularly with the NES and the Super Nintendo stuff, the Nintendo stuff, it's all a very U.S.-centric view of games. A lot of the collectors don't seem to dip into the Japanese stuff.
Well, because it's foreign to us, literally. It's literally foreign. We wouldn't know where to start necessarily. We weren't exposed to it. How do you find out about games from another country easily? And you couldn't up until YouTube. You'd have to, like, well, okay, go on a weird forum that Ian's a member of and ask people about PC Engine games. Like, how do you find out about this stuff if you weren't exposed to it?
Sure.
You know? I think... I'm trying to think of a scenario where they would want to focus on the actual first game releases of these. And I'm trying to think of one that would benefit them. But again, it comes down to the scarcity is not there. I mean, the scarcity is not there in general because the carts are all available, or even the box version. So they can't monetize that. And like I said, you can't monetize a lot of these first Japanese games. Like, they're not worth that much money. They're easier to find in general, a good condition one, because, like, again, the Famicom, they're just a little fucking case with it. You know, that's what you get.
Right.
So it's a little bit easier to get them in complete form. And I guess it doesn't have the same cachet as, oh, when I went to Toys R Us. This is what they always try to say. They try to build this fucking fake nostalgia, which the reason I don't believe it is because if I believed it, they would have bought these games 10, 15 years ago when they were not worth anything, not in the past year and a half. Oh, I went to Toys R Us. That's what I got, Ian. When I went to... I got that. Do I think about, like, pristine condition G.I. Joes I play with? I guess. But it's not something that I'm drawn to. Like, why are you drawn to it for video games versus anything else? Like, I never understood that. That goes back to my arguments on Nintendo Age. I never understood. And I always said, even then, this is not video game collecting. This is something different. This is a weird, weird, like, third cousin of game collecting at most. To me, I think I likened it to, like, people that collected, like, unopened bottles of fucking Coca-Cola from the 50s or something.
At that point, it doesn't so much resemble video game collecting because you're not playing. It's when collecting is the hobby itself.
Yeah, closer. I guess it's more closer.
You find what's hot and what's interesting at that point in time that has a scene around it, and you collect that because it gives you something to talk about and something to buy and something to hold on to and something to look for, something to lord over someone else. I don't know. But at that point, you're collecting to collect. It's not so much the object. It's just...
Well, you're always collecting an object, right?
Well, you are, but I'm just saying it doesn't... It's not so much that it's video games or comic books. It's that it's
Well, the focus shifts.
Something desirable that you can collect a set of.
The focus shifts from the commodity itself to totally just the condition of the commodity.
Yeah, the condition and the rarity.
The condition becomes comes to the forefront, and the game becomes secondary, if that makes sense. Because the people that will buy sealed games for trash games, they'll buy it just because of the condition. And
yeah,
for comic books, people don't do that. For baseball cards, people don't do that. They don't say, I'm going to buy that 87, you know, Mark McGwire Topps rookie card that's pristine. It's not worth, like, there's no reason to do that. Like, there's no reason to do sure. that. I mean, that was a bad example. Mark McGwire rookie card might have been worth something at some point. I'm going to get that pristine condition, I don't know, Willie Randolph card. You know, he was a decent player on the Yankees. So, like, the condition becomes what drives you more so than what is being conditioned or what is being graded, we'll just say.
Sure.
And for video games, it is the most, it's the weirdest distortion of that that I have seen versus comic books, versus even toys, versus anything else that has any sort of pop culture, you know, aspect to it. So, yeah, that's why there's no love for those games. That's why there isn't. Obviously, you can have someone come along with a lot of money, try to buy up those things. Maybe listen to this and be like, oh, I'm going to go buy that stuff just in case. And all it takes is, again, it takes like a handful of people to try to drum up interest. All it takes is, you know what really pushed this? Was when a year ago, there was a couple of articles, two articles put out about this shit. And I didn't agree with the slant of a couple of the articles because it promoted as pie in the sky stuff. And then that allows some more people to come in. And you get a very bullish market out there. That people have already lost money. Some people have made money, but a lot of people are going to lose money in the long term. Look at the Atari shit. That's a big time loser. But even on some of these NES games, there's going to be a lot of losers for sure. Especially the complete in box stuff that's been happening the past 3-4 months to me is insane. There. So.
All right.
Is that it for the podcast, Ian?
That's it.
Aren't you glad we squeezed that in? Where are you getting a cheesecake at?
Cheesesteak.
Cheese steak. Where are you getting a cheesesteak at?
Gaglione's.
Where are they? Brothers. West Point Loma?
They're in that plaza that has the grocery outlet and the CVS up at the corner of Soup Midway Plantation. And where Soup Plantation was. Soup Plantation is closed. They went out of business.
The whole chain?
They're done.
You know how many times I ate at Soup Plantation? Like 30 times.
I love Soup Plantation. It was my favorite buffet. Like, the only buffet I would eat at. Bonnie really enjoyed it there.
I love their warm brownie dessert. And you put some soft serve on that.
I appreciated their baked potato bar.
Oh, that was great. And they had the sweet potatoes, too, didn't they? Sometimes?
Maybe.
I thought they did.
Maybe.
Yeah, they did. That's right, they did. Because all you needed was that, eating with a little maple butter, and you're set. You're
good to go.
You don't need all the sour cream and chives, and that stuff's good, too.
All right.
Let's pour one out for Soup Plantation. By the way, for Gagliano Brothers, they used to have coupons in the buy one, get one.
Mm.
Do you want me to look for you before you leave?
No.
That's now...
Because I'm ordering a delivery.
That's razor thin now, that unfortunately, with everything going on.
I'm sure, yeah.
It's like 13 pages. It used to be like 50.
I was going to say, those things used to be sizable.
All right, that's it for the See You Podcast. Remember, you know, drop us a line on Anchor, anchor.fm/the See You Podcast. We'll listen to your voicemails in the future. We'll see you later.
Bye.